Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, radio.com sports station.
I don't really want to need to. I think Aaron Rodgers is overrated.
How dare you?
And
how dare you, sir?
I think whenever he's played another good buttoned up team, he's basically lost every game in his career that hasn't made mistakes.
How dare
and
that, you?
That's dude. Obviously extreme.
Okay.
But I do think
he never beats the 49ers.
He never beat the Jim Harbaugh 49ers. Right. He's actually beaten the 49ers every other time he's played them in his career.
Really?
Yeah.
Because for some reason,
Aaron Rodgers is actually perfect against the 49ers non-Harbaugh, and he never beat the Harbaugh Niners once.
I still see Colin Kaepernick galloping down the field against the Green Bay Packers. Remember that? That was a glorious sight, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He just take off, and the Packers could do nothing with it. He revolutionized the game for about a season and a half.
Yeah.
God, that was beautiful what he was doing at that time. When he was at the height of his powers, Kaepernick was amazing. And he did it at the expense of the Packers.
I think the Packers are going to be I think they're going to be good. I do think they're going to be solid.
Okay.
And there is more pressure on Aaron after he finally got Mike McCarthy fired. I mean,
you got to win, right? You fired a guy.
He played they'd won a Super Bowl together and he was passive aggressive about it. Like he wanted to be the guy that he wanted to be got my coach fired guy. But he also didn't want to go all in on it for like 5 years. And he had some injuries in there, too. And they actually had some success because McCarthy's a pretty good coach.
He can coach some offense. He wanted to be Baker Mayfield.
He wanted to be Baker Mayfield. But he didn't have the guts, but he kind of passively, aggressively did. That's kind of Aaron. That's kind of him. He's just kind of a weird guy.
He's so good, though. He's so stinking good.
A weird guy.
All right, so you got him 6-4.
If Garoppolo plays in that game, I think the 49ers win it.
Am I 7-4 on your scale right now?
Yeah, and that's where I look at the 7-4 and I go, you know what? You go through this. We all do this. You go through it and you go, you know what? I got to just subtract one.
Okay, but hold on.
But I'm not going to do that, but I'm making a mental note that I got to subtract one somewhere.
Okay. Week 13 and 14, you're on the road both times. Baltimore, early start, 10 a.m. start.
Loss.
You got that as a loss.
Yeah.
Next week, you go to New Orleans.
Loss.
Okay. So now you're at 7-6. So now you're starting to say, all right, this kind of still feels a little bit normal.
Right.
You come home against Kyle Shanahan's old team, the Atlanta Falcons, and Matt Ryan. You think Matt Ryan goes for 400 yards and 5 scores?
I'm going to say win.
What? That's win number 8? You got me 8-6?
I'm going to say win.
Wow. 8-6. All righty. You've got a win against Atlanta, home game December 15th, and now you've got week 16 and 17. You're staying in the division, as you know. You're home for one for the LA Rams. You're on the road for Seattle in week 17.
Loss.
And you finish 8-8?
Yep.
So you're 8-6 with 2 games to go.
And a shot at the playoffs.
You're probably a wild card team right there.
And then you don't get in, and then you'd end up not getting in. You're either in a position where if you win that last game against Seattle, you're in.
You're 9-7.
If you win and you get help, you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I was one game maybe optimistic.
You know what?
Just on the overall how it played out.
I will tell you this. If that team is 8-6 going in with 2 games to go, I'm pretty happy.
Definitely.
I think I'm pretty ecstatic about the way things are playing out. Because I know they're 2 tough games. But all I'm thinking is I win one and I'm a wild card team. I love that.
Right.
I'm all for what you... I'm not against your first 14 games. The last two are going to be tough. They're the 2 best teams in your division.
Yeah.
Or so you think.
Right.
But remember, Seattle is that pivot team. We just heard Rob Lauder, Niner Nation, say the Niners and the Seahawks could be the same team. Right? And I'm paraphrasing a little bit about what he said.
And how funny would that be if the Niners go into the final game of the year at Seattle, of all places, where they haven't won since 2011, I believe. Harbaugh's first year.
Last year, a 10-win team in 2018, the Seahawks were. Did we go over this on the Vegas line?
No.
Do you know what Vegas has them at?
The Seahawks?
They were a 10-win team last year.
8.5, 9.5?
Boom! 8.5.
8.5, yeah.
8.5, and they've got the Niners as an 8-win team. You're looking at a Week 17 that could... If it boils down to Week 17...
So we're in line with the... Yeah.
That's pretty good, JD. That's pretty good.
We're in line with the Sharps.
We were kicking the Basketball Hall of Fame a little bit earlier. Moose in San Jose wants to kick us now. Moose, let's give me a quick Moose. We'll let him go a little off topic here because we did mention the Hall of Fames. Moose, the Baseball Hall of Fame is rolling to this weekend. They got the big events. But what do you think about the Basketball Hall of Fame?
I got a quick thing on Jimmy. I just want to say after, too. But, J.D., earlier you said that the Basketball Hall of Fame is a joke. And it kind of – I mean, the Basketball Hall of Fame, I get it. My opinion where it's a joke is that they take in the entirety of the career. I mean, I kind of like it, but I could see why it's a joke because guys will have a great college or – international games in the FIBA or in the Olympics, then they'll count that guy as being essentially a Hall of Famer. But how is it that in your opinion, the NBA or the Naismith Hall of Fame is a joke, but not the MLB? When in MLB, they literally kind of pick and choose their guys that they want and not. So that to me is kind of a weird. That's kind of a weird. I would say MLB is the joke. And then my other thing, real quick on Jimmy, man, if he stays healthy. It's kind of one of those things. The Niners, look, at the end of the day in the Bay Area, football is king. As much as the Warriors have done, football will always be king here because they were Montana Rice. That era was first. So I think with Jimmy coming in going 5-0 early on, the Bay Area just got so hyped up and wrapped around this guy. You guys said earlier that a lot of Niners fans see him as being elite or can be elite. And I think we just want that so bad, whether it's there yet or not. We really want that to be the case. And so we're almost placing Jimmy and Shanahan and this group of guys in that echelon without actually seeing it. Like you said, the Bears went in the playoff game. They should have won that game. They actually have showed a little something for it. We haven't showed anything just yet. So I'll take your take. I'll take it off the air. But
thanks, man. Appreciate it, Moose. On that first one, I can help you on that. But here's the difference. In baseball, I know how you get in. The baseball writers vote. I know how you get in. And I think oftentimes, JD, correct me if I'm wrong, they're pretty transparent with their voting.
Yeah.
Most of the men and women who vote.
They put them out.
The
day that everybody knows.
They say, here's who we vote. In basketball, it's a secret society of people in a back room checking off boxes.
And that's the problem I have with
it. We got to get a European guy. Let's get someone out of the women's league. Let's get an old-time guy. They're checking off boxes, but I don't even know who's involved.
Right. And the problem I do have with the Baseball Hall of Fame is it's a little holier than thou.
It's a little holier than thou as far as
who votes and you know,
which I
morality.
I think they got to revamp that who votes because there are some people.
Correct.
Once you get the baseball writer's card, you're in for life. Some of these people, and I know some of the voters,
haven't covered the game in 2 decades.
Jesus, they haven't been to a ballpark for crying out loud, and then they're getting a say in who goes into the hallowed hall. Now, my description of it is it's a museum. Even if you think Bonds and Clemens, let's just use them as an example because they're the biggest examples. Even if you think they were frauds.
They're Hall of Famers.
They are, but then say it on their plaque. Say that.
Okay.
This is, in fact, I would have a display of, this is what was going on at this time in baseball. Guys were having inflated numbers because they were doing certain things with their bodies which aren't of the norm. And we lived that life in baseball. You know why? Because the players did and they profited from it, and the owners did and they profited from it,
right,
and the fans did and we profited from it because we loved going to see it.
Sure.
I didn't like Mark McGwire doing it against the Cubs, but hitting 70 home runs is pretty weird and cool, right? Sammy Sosa hitting three. You know what? Not many guys had hit 60 up until the time when Sosa had three straight years of 60-plus bombs. Come on. I was going crazy like the next guy. We all benefited from it.
We all enjoyed it.
Give me the display at the museum that says, hey, this is what was going on. We realized it wasn't good for the game. we hope to have cut it off, and now we move forward.
Yeah, I'm good with it. Because I like it.
That's
Sign
my
me up.
Yeah, and but those other guys are Hall of Famers, aren't they?
Yes.
The end. That's just my belief. That's how I look at it. That's our Hall of Fame discussion for today.
Put them in.
Are you going to watch any of the ceremony?
Probably not.
Do you watch any of the ceremony?
See, I've got tomorrow off.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're doing the whole week.
Oh, yeah,
right?
That's right.
And then we're doing Saturday next week, too.
God dang it. Why
and there's some, you know, there's
so
some Giants games. Like, we both got the double thing going.
Yeah.
Where, like, you're
going
to be doing some Maze
yeah,
TV,
I am.
And I'm going to be doing some Giants going to the, you know, oh, at the God. Ballpark. So Sunday's like a day. That's a day where it's like if you're going to have some balance added to your life,
and
that's like the day that I've got to have it.
Even if it's just doing laundry.
And even if it's just getting out in the sun a little bit.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Acting like a human.
Don't tell me that you're going to have to we're doing next week, Monday with Bonte, Monday through Friday. Don't tell me you're doing that and then going to the Giants game after. I'm like the Cub.
Yeah, Giants a couple Cub. Of those games, yeah. Yeah.
Let me know which ones because I'm going. Monday, yeah. I'm going to walk over.
Tuesday for sure. Because that's a Bumgarner start.
So Tuesday's
on the coverage schedule.
Even though I'm doing the A's start early. I can finish pre. I can walk over, catch an inning or two,
yeah.
And come back for post.
Yeah.
That's just so letting everyone inside the life of as I'm doing post game, A's post game.
Yeah.
After having gone to see the Cubs play the Giants.
You're a junkie.
I am a little bit of a junkie. I'm setting up a trip for. Guess what I'm doing? I'll tell you what I'm doing. We got to step aside.
Yeah.
12 minutes past the hour, 12 o'clock. Final hour coming with JD and Coz. We'll get back into the Giants. We also wanted to touch a little bit on the Warriors. We know that some people have some Warrior fatigue and some NBA fatigue. We'll just slide in a little bit of that between now and 1 o'clock. JD and Coz on 95.7 The Game. All right, everybody, we continue along the way here on our four-hour journey on a Saturday morning into afternoon with John Dickinson and me, Jim Cozumore. We were just talking about the Basketball Hall of Fame. All right, and there are fun things that go on with that. We understand that. But the NBA, without question, I think, has become the biggest off-season sport of all the sports. Remember when it used to be baseball? The Hot Stove League used to be the big deal. Remember that?
Yeah.
You know, season winner, World Series winner. Then you'd have your meetings in November and December, and that's when the hot stove was going on and you figured out who your team was going to sign and who they were going to trade for. That used to be it.
Doesn't happen anymore.
No. Moves don't happen.
Now it's the NBA.
And the NBA is the fun thing. Once the season is over, I almost had more fun. You know what? I might say I had more fun in that stretch of free agency / summer league than I did in a lot of the playoffs. But we'll get into why it was so fun because we're going to talk to Sean Hyken, who is the national NBA writer for Bleacher Report. And we have Sean on there now. Is he ready to roll? Not quite yet. All right, we're trying to hook up with Sean. Sean writes for Bleacher Report, and he wrote how the summer league culture is the NBA's version of Comic-Con. And if anyone's familiar with Comic-Con, that's going on. That goes on down in San Diego when people come dressed as their favorite characters, and it's a really fun atmosphere. I've never been to one, but I understand Comic-Con is the place to be for anyone who's into the Marvel stuff or whatever the characters are that you like to follow. But it's one of those great places where a lot of movie trailers are let out, but it's got a really neat vibe and feel to it. So Sean writes about the NBA's Comic-Con. So let's bring in Sean Hyken. He is the NBA national writer for Bleacher Report. He joins us here on 95.7 The Game. Sean, welcome in on a Saturday. Thanks for joining us. I hope your weekend's going well.
Doing all right. How about you guys?
Doing great. Explain what you mean by the kind of the NBA's Comic-Con is the summer league atmosphere and culture. Explain what you meant by that.
Okay, so I've been going to summer league in Las Vegas professionally for 8 years. I think my first one was 2012. So I've been going for 8 years now. And, you know, one of the things I like to do to kind of pass the time while I'm there, because obviously a lot of time I'm there to work, but then you also have a lot of downtime just kind of watching these games. And the games themselves aren't very interesting because they're mostly rookies and undrafted guys. And so you kind of find yourself people watching a lot, like in the you know, in the crowds. And so you see a lot of kind of unconventional jerseys in these crowds. Like, obviously, you see kind of, you know, the ones you usually see. Like, you see a lot of Steph Curry. You see a lot of LeBrons. You see a lot of Kobe's. You see a lot of Jordans. You see a lot of kind of the guys you'd expect. But then, you know, you'll always see, especially, like, if a certain team is playing. Like, when the Warriors are playing, like, you look around and, like, you'll see a lot of, like, OG, you know, We Believe type. Like, you'll see, like, I've seen, like, Andres Beatriz's jerseys before. Like, Kalina Azdabuki. Like, those types of things. And so I've kind of, like, over the years that I've been going to Summer League, I've kind of started making it a recurring thing that I do where I'm just like, if I can get one, I'll take a picture of somebody wearing, you know, some obscure jersey that's not just kind of one of the more common ones and tweet it. And I kind of keep a Twitter thread going during the whole weekend or the whole, like, four or five days or however long I'm there. And people seem to like it. And this year my editors finally let me write about it.
Yeah, Summer League is something else. How do you think, where is the league, the NBA, on the Summer League right now? Because it has blown up, and there are great crowds throughout the day, especially that first weekend. I know they've extended it the last couple of years, and now every team is there. They even brought in a couple of teams from overseas to even up the total amount of teams. For scheduling purposes, where is the league on what it's become overall?
Well, it's just become a bigger and bigger and bigger event every year. And, you know, I think when it first started, in the Las Vegas Summer League first started in 2003, 2004, somewhere in there, I think only six teams participated in it. And the guy who created it is Warren Legarry, who's kind of one of the most influential people in the NBA that a lot of people don't know about. He's the agent for a whole lot of coaches in the league, but he was the one that kind of put the event together. And since then, so when I first started going in 2012, I think there were like 20 or 22 teams that would go, because then there was also the one in Orlando that some of the East Coast teams would only go to the Orlando one and not the Vegas one. But then starting last year, every team, all 30 teams, would actually send a team to Vegas. And so it's gotten into a bigger thing. It's not even just about the on-court stuff. It's basically an industry convention at this point, because with all 30 teams in one place, that means every coach, every GM, every agent, every scout, like basically everybody who's important behind the scenes in the NBA is all in Las Vegas and for one, you know, 10-day period. And so a lot of deals get done there, a lot of kind of meetings happen, a lot of just kind of stuff gets discussed. It's really become this industry event. Now on the fan side, it's a pretty good deal for fans, because I think a day pass is like $40 or $50 or something like that. And there are games going literally for 10 or 12 hours a day in both gyms. And so you could pay $40 or $50 and you can get like 10 or 12 hours of entertainment out of it. And so I think it's become a much bigger thing for fans, especially, you know, on the West Coast. Like, it's only a 4-hour drive from LA to Vegas. So, you know, a lot of Lakers fans come out for it. A lot of Sacramento fans come out for it. Golden State, Phoenix, like Utah, like the teams are kind of in that area that's close enough to Vegas and you can make a 1-day trip out of it. It's just become a much bigger thing every year.
Sean Hyken, national NBA writer for Bleacher Report, joining us 95.7 The Game. I want to get back to the Comic-Con atmosphere of it. What are some of the favorite jerseys, old-school jerseys? Because, you know, I would assume if I go to any arena, I'm going to get LeBron Lakers stuff, I'm going to get LeBron Cavaliers stuff, I'm going to get Steph Curry. Give me some of the weirder or odder things that you'd see, because Comic-Con is known for the crazy. What are some of the fun ones that you've seen out at the NBA Summer League?
Well, this year, I really regret that I didn't really get to talk to this person, because it was not the day that I was really chasing this story. But I saw a Landry Fields Knicks jersey, which I thought was kind of interesting. Somebody told me that they saw a Greg Ostertag Kings jersey. I didn't get to see that one.
Nice.
But somebody told me that they saw that one. Now, over the years, like I said, because it's only a 4-hour drive from L.A. to Vegas, Lakers fans always travel pretty well for the event. And so the Lakers fans kind of usually have a pretty good representation. And obviously, you're going to see a lot of Kobe's, a lot of Shaq's, a lot of, you know, Magic's, LeBron's, Kareem, kind of all the basic ones. But the Lakers fans kind of bring out some deep cuts also. I saw a Kurt Rambis one a couple of years ago, number 31. This year, I saw an Eddie Jones number 25, because remember, Eddie Jones wore number 25 for 1 year, and then they retired for Dale Goodrich, so he had to switch to 6. And so I saw somebody with an Eddie Jones number 25 this year. Like, they kind of come out, and like I said, I mean, you guys are in the Bay Area. Warriors fans always kind of rep the We Believe era. You know, you see a lot of Steven Jackson, you see a lot of Mike Dunleavy, you see a lot of kind of, you know, Baron Davis. Like, you know, obviously you see a lot of Steph and Clay and Durant also, but you kind of see some of the mid-2000s ones, and even like some earlier ones, like you'll see some Run TMC ones, like, you know, some Chris Mullins, like people kind of bring them out.
Have you seen a Beadrinch?
Yes, actually, I have.
Oh, my God. That is awesome.
I have a picture somewhere on my phone from, you know, what I don't remember what year it was, and I thought it wasn't this year, but, like, I've seen a Beadrinch. I've seen, like, a Kalina Azubuki. I've seen Anthony Randolph. I've seen, like you'll see them. Like, I even saw a couple of, like, Corey Maggette ones.
Oh.
Is there a business that we this is just the three of us talking now. Is there a business, Sean, that we could put together where we sell, like, Ewing Seattle Sonics? Remember Ewing played, what, a year or two for the Seattle Supersonics? Where we only sell the biggest name guys with the offshoot team. Like, if I sold
Jordan Wizards,
Mullen Pacers, Ewing Sonics. What was that one?
Hakeem Olajuwon with the Raptors.
Yeah. Olajuwon Raptors. Is there a business that we can start with, like, the biggest names in their...
Yeah, it's called NBA.com.
Is that what it is?
Well, forget about Patrick Ewing with the Sonics. What about Patrick Ewing with the Orlando...
Yeah.
Or Dwayne Wade, the, like, half season he played with Cleveland. I think...
Yeah, those are the ones.
Tony Parker this last past year played with Charlotte. That was a little bit weird. Like, these guys who, like... You know their whole careers, like I've actually seen Karl Malone Lakers jerseys before at Summer League before. That's kind of another one where he played most of his career with Utah. That's what he's known for, and he kind of had that one year at the end where he was ring chasing and signed with the Lakers. But I've seen Malone Lakers jerseys before, number 11.
Those are phenomenal. That's a great. Which, by the way, I think was Bob McAdoo's number when he was wearing it for the Lakers, wasn't it? Number 11.
Yeah, and I think he was another guy who wasn't with the team long enough to retire that number, even though he was obviously a great player.
Yeah, exactly. See, I'm telling you, man, we got to get into that side business. I don't know how we do it. Sean Hyken, who covers the NBA on a national level for Bleacher Report, joining us on 95.7 The Game. Hey, how much when you're sitting there do you keep an eye on, you know, what general managers are sitting next to what general managers, or what agents are sitting next to what general managers? Is it the same? Is that also part of the Comic-Con feel? Is that you can sense things are cooking based on who's sitting where?
Well, they're kind of different modes that you're in, because when I'm down in kind of the area where all the team personnel hang out, I'm kind of more in reporter mode where I'm kind of trying to talk to different people and see what's going on. Whereas when I'm in the stands, people watching, with the jerseys, I'm kind of more laid back, and I'm just like, okay, that's kind of a funny jersey. I might want to get a picture of that one. They're kind of two different modes that you're in. But, yeah, it is kind of a convention on both levels where, like, the fans come through and they, you know, want to wear these jerseys because they know that the other kinds of people who are going to be driving or flying into Las Vegas in the middle of July when it's, like, 120 degrees out every day to watch terrible basketball played mostly by rookies and undrafted guys are the kinds of people who are going to appreciate the obscure jerseys and actually give them props for it, whereas – like, if they just wear it around, you know, every day, they might just get a lot of weird looks, whereas the other fans are going to appreciate it. And then on the team side, yeah, all of the GMs, all the agents, all the team personnel are all in one place. And so it's easy for, you know, deals to get done. Because, I mean, obviously, like, these people talk to each other on the phone all the time, but it's a lot easier to get something done when you can actually talk to somebody in person. So a whole lot of deals get done. I was gone from Vegas by the time the Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul trade happened, but... You know, I have friends who cover the Rockets who are kind of saying that, like, their Rockets team people were, like, acting kind of funny and not as willing to talk, you know, in the few hours before the trade broke. And you can always, you know, there have been times in the past where I've been there and you can always kind of sense, like, you know, and in retrospect, like, last year I did see, like, R.C. Buford and Masai Ujiri off in the distance talking to each other at Summer League. And then a few weeks later, the Kawhi Leonard trade happens and it's like, okay, like, obviously, like, you know, maybe not all this stuff gets agreed on, but, like, when all these people are in the same place, they get talking and they exchange some ideas and the seeds kind of get planted for some of the stuff that ends up happening later.
Sean, give me your top four as of right now in the Western Conference.
I would probably say the two LA teams. I don't know, this is not specifically in order, although I think I might have to put the Clippers one just because not just getting Paul George and Kawhi, but I also like their depth and like the other guys they have on the roster, like Montrez and Pat Beverly and Lou Williams and kind of some of these other guys. And, you know, Mo Harkless was a big pickup, re-signing to Michael Green was big. I kind of maybe have them as the favorites right now. And then I don't love the Lakers' depth as much, but anytime a team has LeBron and Anthony Davis, you kind of have to give them the benefit of the doubt. And then the other two, like, I think Denver just, you know, they stayed pretty much the same team as they were last year. They picked up Jeremy Grant, who I think is going to be a good big for them off the bench. And then Utah, I think, got a lot better with Bojan Bogdanovic and Mike Conley coming in, and then also Ed Davis, who they brought in to come off the bench as a backup center. Like, those are, I think, the four. But then, you know, you also look down the line. You know, Houston is still going to be in it. Now, you know, with Russ, like, that's going to be interesting. Portland is still in it. You know, New Orleans could be a little bit surprising. Dallas could be a little bit surprising. I think OKC is even going to be better than people. Like, the West is going to be deep. But I think if you had to make me pick a top four, I think it's probably the two LA teams in some order.
And Sean, how do you think D'Angelo Russell works with the Warriors? It's a unique situation. No Klay Thompson for a good portion of next season. I think, what's your read on why that trade took place? I mean, obviously, it was getting something for Durant. But how do you see the fit as far as D'Angelo Russell, the player, versus D'Angelo Russell, the trade chip?
I don't love the on-court fit. I think it's kind of like Steph Monte 2.0. And honestly, if I were the Warriors at this point, I would not let Klay Thompson come back next year. I would do the Derrick Rose thing or the Kristaps Porzingis thing, and they just paid him a ton of money for the next 5 years. You want to make sure you maximize that 5 years as much as possible, and that's, you know, on the long-term end of it. So I would, if I were them, I would just not let him play at all, because they're not going to win a title this year. Like, that's just not going to happen with all the changes that took place with the team and how much better the rest of the West got. So I would not even play Klay at all this coming year if I were them. I don't love the fit with D'Angelo, because he's a guy who runs a lot of pick and roll. The Warriors don't really run a lot of pick and roll. So, like, are they going to change up their entire offense to accommodate this guy that they basically only got because they didn't want to lose Kevin Durant for nothing? So I don't love the fit. I still think the Warriors are going to be decent. Like, they're going to be competitive, obviously, and they still have Steph Curry and Draymond Green, which, you know, I think they probably still a playoff team. But even then, like, the West is so deep that I don't know. But I don't think it's really a natural fit between Steph and D'Angelo.
Hey, Sean, thanks for joining us. This has been a lot of fun. Everything from the summer league to what's going on in the NBA now. I know it's the off season in theory, but it seems like there is no off season in the NBA. We appreciate all your insights. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. It was good to talk to you guys.
Awesome. Sean Hyken, Bleacher Report. He's our national NBA writer with a great idea of, I think, we look at Walt Frazier with the Cavaliers. We could sell that jersey. Don't hate on my Gary Payton Heat jersey.
Your Jermaine O'Neal Warriors jersey.
I think your Jermaine O'Neal Warriors jersey would be solid. I think your Wizards Jordan, like you were saying. Look, guys, I still have a brand new Wizards Jordan jersey. How awesome is that? And that's got to be with the old blue. Remember when they went like blue and tan and black as a color scheme? Who picked that color scheme? I like the Ewing Sonics.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of the Ewing Sonics.
Olajuwon Raptors is a great one.
That is fantastic. I think we can get a lot of great, great stars who are affiliated with one team, but then they wrote it out at the end. God, that's awesome.
You could sell other merchandise, like your Russell Westbrook Sonics jersey.
That's not bad either.
Was drafted by the Sonics.
Yes.
But never played for the Sonics because they became the Thunder like a week later.
I like that idea. I like where you're going with that. So we've come up with a new business, JD and I. We'll cut Sean in on part of that deal. You did ask a good question, though, in the end regarding the Warriors. And that has to do with D'Angelo Russell.
Monte, Steph 2.0.
Wasn't that a wild...
I think your head exploded.
It did. That was quite the comparison. For a Warrior fan to hear that, come on.
Jill Nottebody text line 415, this guy's an idiot. I'm guessing that was in response to that. I wouldn't let Klay Thompson come back was the other. That was the other thing. That was the other
nugget of news. All right, you want to start with that one? I'm going into a brand new billion-dollar building. I'm doubling people's prices. I'm not going to have an NBA title contender. And you're telling me to take one of the reasons I'm asking people to see this team to not play for a full year.
I'm going to give a very chalk Steve Kerr-ish quote.
Oh, boy. Just what I need.
It's going to be short, though.
Okay.
When Clay's healthy, he'll play.
Oh, man. Thanks, Steve. Another gem. Let me ask you, though. Would you tell him to sit?
No.
Because you don't know if he'll be able to play.
I would take, if it looks like he can come back, and we've seen all kinds of wild 5 to 7 5 months. I think his agent at one point had said 5 to 7 months, and then everybody got in a froth because it was 5 to 7 months. I mean, he was injured June 13th. 5 months, that's not even Thanksgiving. Like people were, like it was, and then his agent had to come back. It's probably more on the seventh end.
Yeah.
Because people were in such a froth. Okay. On the seven end, that's January 13th. I'm more inclined to think it's going to be All-Star break or even March 1st.
Okay, so that's...
And that's how I would manage it. It's okay if it's January 13th on the seven-month end, I'm going to give him another month. And then maybe a little more. But even if you do that, there is still some season left. And I go back to my Steve Kerr. If Clay's healthy, when Clay's healthy, Clay will play.
Let me throw this into the equation, though. The Warriors can petition the NBA for the injury. There's an official name for it. It's the injury. If you tell the league, hey, this guy's not going to be with us for the whole year.
Oh, the exception.
Injury exception.
Yeah. You can't. I mean, it's just not in play.
But if you go to the league now and you say he's not going to play for my whole year, they might give me the injury exception.
Well, but then he's got to not play the whole year.
Exactly. But you get a guy who might be able to compete, a one-year guy. I don't know who's out there right now. But you get a guy. So what you're saying is you're willing to roll the dice because he might be ready in seven months.
Well, I think there is a benefit in bringing – like, I say, you know what? Okay, if he's healthy, he plays, right?
Okay.
But I also think there's a benefit in knocking some of the rust off next year. Because I'm with Sean. I'm with our guy Sean, who we just had – you know, I don't think the Warriors can win a championship next year. Like, they're not winning an NBA championship next year. But you can bring Klay Thompson back and knock a little of the rust off. So for the next year, 2020-2021, you have your, in theory, your core of Curry and Klay and Draymond. Couple of pieces maybe you get for D'Angelo Russell, your trade exception for Iguodala, and all of a sudden you've got a team that's deep and still has that championship core that maybe can make a push in 2020-2021. And Klay Thompson's got a little bit of the rust knocked off from coming back in, let's say, March next year.
All right, let me ask you this. And this is a little bit like the Giants question that we had earlier, just a little slightly different version of it. If you're the Warriors going into the new building, do you need to be a playoff team next year?
You need to sure as heck try.
You've been to the finals five straight years.
You need to try.
Okay. So you can't just be a team that's 40-42. You can't be that team.
I mean, that might be what you are.
It might be.
With some injuries. But that's not going to be... they're going to come into the thing, and I think that's why you get D'Angelo Russell. You get D'Angelo Russell because he gives you a better chance of winning 45 or 48 games and getting into the playoffs because you know you're not going to have Klay Thompson. It also takes a little bit of the heat off of rushing Klay Thompson back.
I'm not adding... Let's take Klay Thompson out of the equation. Right, because he's going to miss at least half the season at best.
Correct.
Okay, so just take him out of the equation.
Fair.
Steph Curry, Draymond Green, add McKinney and Evans. Those guys return.
Yeah.
Right? I've added D'Angelo Russell.
Nice player.
I like him.
Okay.
But I have a different version of recency bias. I saw him go for 40-plus in Sacramento, and I think he scored 20 of those in the fourth.
28, actually.
Is that what it was, 28
yeah,
in the fourth?
And they were down 28.
Yeah, yeah. And they came back and beat the Kings, and it was all him.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of on the Russell bandwagon.
I remember that game.
Yeah, there you go. You were there?
I was actually not there.
You were watching at home?
I think I was actually at a bar close to here.
Okay.
Because I doing Warriors post-game that
Warriors
night.
So you were getting juiced before post-game.
Well, no, it was after.
Oh, okay.
It was done. It was an early game.
Gotcha. I thought you were getting juiced.
No, it was an early Warriors game, so I was on the post, and
gotcha.
I got done with the post, and then happened to see that fourth quarter.
But I'm a fan of Russell.
Yeah, that's it, see?
Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket. But I like D'Angelo Russell. So I've added that to Steph, Draymond, McKinney, Evans, D'Angelo Russell, Alec Burks.
He's okay.
Like that's kind
I've
of my.
I've always kind of liked him.
That's my answer too.
I've always kind of liked him, but if he's your eighth, ninth, tenth man,
Robinson the third.
Well, here's the thing: one of those guys is going to have to start. McKinney, Burks, Robinson the third. One of those guys has to start.
Willie Cauley-Stein.
I'm not the biggest Cauley-Stein guy, and I've heard a lot of, well, you get Cauley-Stein out of the Sacramento environment. And you put him with the Warriors. I've heard a lot of that.
Okay.
And you know what? You know what my answer? My answer may surprise you.
Yes.
Because my answer is, you know what? I actually think this is the Sacramento believes now that they have a culture that's beyond Willie Cauley-Stein and wanting him to be in it. I actually think this is a case, and it's the first case in a while, where the Kings actually made the right move on that, letting him go, not paying him.
All right.
Going out and getting him, even though they paid more for the guys they got.
Dwayne Dedman.
It was the right move. Because,
okay.
So I actually don't think you can say Cauley-Stein didn't play well because of the Kings' culture or didn't live up to expectations because of the Kings' culture. I think that's – he didn't live up to expectations because he's a guy that doesn't live up to expectations.
Exactly.
So that's the point. I do not hold the Kings and their culture – whatever it was. And
they're
it was,
not responsible
they're
for
not
Willie
responsible
Cauley-Stein.
For Cauley-Stein not living up to it. That's on him.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to really quick.
And I think you would agree. You would agree with that, yes?
I absolutely. Let me say this. Yeah. Willie Cauley-Stein's one of my favorite NBA players off the court.
Interesting guy.
Interesting guy. You want to talk to somebody and about anything but basketball, you're going to have a pretty entertaining conversation.
Yeah, and even when you're talking basketball, it's an entertaining conversation because he thinks he's pretty good.
He thinks he's a unicorn. He thinks he can be...
He thinks he's Patrick Ewing in his prime.
Well, I don't know if you recall the game. They were playing the Knicks, and Porzingis had the big game.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I could. That's kind of my game. That's kind of what
right.
I am.
And then there was the other game where they got crushed on the boards. Right? Wasn't the other quote was they got crushed on the boards and he mentioned a couple of he's like, well, those guys get paid $100 million to rebound. Or those guys get paid $25 million a year to rebound.
There was the game.
He's not a big rebounder.
No, he's not. And there was the game against Minnesota where Karl Anthony Towns just took him to school. It was, you know, it was the 30-20 night. It was one of those. And Willie's like, man, you guys just aren't watching what I'm doing with him. You just don't see how I'm
doing. Oh, yes. I do remember that game?
Just so you understand, and again, I can't emphasize enough, I like him. I think he's a nice guy, and I think he's interesting. I like Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yeah.
I know, I'll tell it's one.
I like him at the price point the Warriors got him.
I agree with you on that, too.
But he's also been an inconsistent effort guy, and he's got to play harder, more consistently.
His third year in the he's played 4 years in the NBA. His third year in the NBA, he averaged 10.6 points a game and 5.3 rebounds. Oh, wait, is that right? No, I'm looking at the wrong numbers. I apologize.
Quick text, by the way, 925, and this is accurate. And I've mentioned this in previous weeks, but we'll reiterate it today. Warriors are hard-capped, even with the injury exception now, so they would – even if they got a $9 million injury exception, they'd have to shed $9 million to use the $9
million. Wow, okay.
So that's forget
on that idea.
Yeah, you can't even...
That idea's out the window.
Like the trade exception they get for Iguodala, they can't even use that because they're hard capped.
Great. Getting back to Willie Cauley-Stein. Third year in the NBA, he averaged just under 13 a game. 12.8 points a game, and he averaged 7 rebounds a game. Okay? So that's... Yeah. Those are okay numbers. His contract year was the next year, in a year in which they played far more up-tempo than the previous season.
Correct.
Okay? His scoring numbers went down a point a game, 11.9 points per game, 0.9 points.
And part of that was there was better talent around him, too.
But I maintain if he would have just run the damn floor.
Right, which he doesn't do consistently.
If he'd have done that, he could have been Capella in Capella's last year, and he could have made not $90 million.
And here's the other thing. He doesn't do the things that you think a guy with his body type would do. He's not a great he can run.
Yeah.
He doesn't run consistently. You think he's a shot blocker because he's long. He's not a shot blocker.
Doesn't even average a shot block a game.
And he's big, so you think he's a great rebounder. He's not a great rebounder.
No.
He's been at... For the most part in his career, he's been an underwhelming effort guy. That's the rat on the table.
I will give you that.
Now, again, at the price point where the Warriors got him, having Draymond right next to him, yelling at him to run and do the right things, he is a guy that plays well in the pick-and-pop game, pick-and-roll game, can be that dive guy to the basket. He likes playing offense.
Yeah, but he can't shoot a jump shot. Not like
he's gotten better.
Oh, certainly has. You know, I'll tell you. You watch him before the game. Yeah. He goes through a dribbling routine like he's Steph Curry, crying out loud.
Yeah, because he was a guy that was a guard. He was one of those bigs that was kind of a guard type coming up.
Whatever you want to call him,
Mike thinks he's Porzingis.
He thinks he is Porzingis. But if you look at the Warriors, I think Vegas has him at 47.5 wins right now. I think that's their number.
And if they're healthy, I think that's about right.
At first, I thought they could still be a 50-win team. But when I say Curry, because I have to keep Thompson out of it, Curry, Green, McKinney, Evans, Russell, Cauley-Stein, Burks, Spellman, Robinson III.
Don't forget Looney.
Looney is 10. When I say those 10 names, do those 10 names sound like 47.5 wins?
If Curry is healthy and Curry and Draymond is healthy and Draymond and Russell is pretty good and Cauley-Stein is pretty good, yes. To me, that's what it comes down to me. They're going to have it buttoned up together.
Mm-hmm.
No more. And look, this died with Durant leaving
right.
and Klay Thompson being injured, but there's no more tricking off games in, you know, November and
right.
February 5th, you're playing so-and-so, and I just don't have it tonight. Well, if you have those nights now, then you're in big trouble. Like, it's got to be high effort all the time just to make the playoffs.
So what you're saying about Draymond Green, for instance, who played overweight for a portion of the last season.
I think he's going to come back in great shape.
That's what I'm saying. You've got to start the year in the shape you were in at the end
of
the
year. And I think he knows that.
Okay.
It's also a contract year for
him. Okay. All right. That's fair.
I think Draymond knows he's going to have to be excellent.
If anything, being that it's a contract year for him, do you think this could be a surprisingly good year for the Warriors? Because when Draymond Green is in many ways the engine, right? Curry's the best player. Curry might average 35 a game. I don't know.
Right.
But Draymond Green's the engine. Could this be a surprisingly better year than we think? A 50-win season because Draymond is so motivated?
If that does happen, that will be why.
Okay.
If they win 50-plus. If this team wins 52 games, it's going to be because Stephen Curry's an MVP-level player again, and Draymond is phenomenal. And D'Angelo Russell fits, and Klay Thompson comes back. I mean, that's almost the only way they're winning 52 plus. I mean, I think they're going to have to lock in and have a lot of things go really well to win 47, 48. And I kind of put them in that 46 to 48 win range.
Steve in Newark, as I like to call it, Newark, 888-957-9570. Give me Steve on line one. Let's see what Steve has to say. What do the Warriors need to do this week, Steve?
The key to the Warriors is Ron Adams.
Ah, defense.
And the defensive play of Willie Cauley-Stein and the new guard they got. I can't remember his name.
Which Russell. One? D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah, Russell.
Yeah, D'Angelo Russell. They both need to learn how to play defense. We got Draymond. And we're going to have Klay at the end of the season. And Curry's okay, but those two guys need to learn how to play defense. And Ron Adams is the key. He's got to get those boys playing defense.
I think Ron Adams is an extremely important piece to the puzzle, Steve. I like the way you think about this. Thank you very much. By the way, I've been gone for 3 weeks.
Big.
It is. I've been gone for 3 weeks. They got that whole Adams thing figured out. Remember when the Warriors gave the Lakers permission to talk to
He's
him?
He's coming back, different role, might not travel as much.
Gotcha.
Nothing official, going to be focused on the defense, but also more player development.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. You know what? Good on the Warriors for letting a guy do that.
Got a raise, presumably.
He's been around, you know what? He's been around the NBA for a long time, and he's had a number of different stops along the way. And he is known as one of the geniuses of a particular part of the game, defense. And for the Warriors to reward an employee with that, you know what? You're going to get paid. You travel a little bit. You don't have to go to that 11-day Eastern swing that every team's got to do that really stinks to high heaven. You know, you're playing, what, 5-6 games in 11 nights in, you know, Orlando and Charlotte. You can skip that.
Sure.
Watch it on TV, and then you send your report into us.
Yeah.
You know what? Good on the Warriors, I say.
Yeah, I agree.
That's good. That's being good to your employees on that. I think there's a little pressure on the head coach. I think
it's different.
It's a much different team. Now, if he's that genius coach that we think he is, I'd like to see him, you know, give me those 3-4 extra wins that a head coach can give you and get me to 50.
And I think with some of the conversation already about maybe changing the system, I think Steve Kerr's on to that. No, I think he's on to the fact that it's going to have to be different. I think he knows he's going to have to be a little more hands-on. I think he knows he's going to have to put a greater imprint on things.
I think the season could be pretty wild and woolly next year. Like when you factor in
basketball standpoint, which is going to be refreshing.
Yes,
because that really hasn't been there as much. It's been more the other stuff. Until the playoffs.
This is you bringing up Draymond. I mean, this is an important year for him. Pretty volatile guy, and I don't mean that in the negative way. He can challenge a teammate.
Yeah, he's going to have to.
Well, challenge.
I know what you're saying. If you're losing and you're doing that, then it becomes bad culture,
right? And getting into it with Kevin Durant is one thing, but if you start chewing on Alec Burks or pick anyone you want that isn't a primary,
and also hasn't been around to see it.
That's not a good culture.
Right.
You want two stars. You know, you can argue that, two stars yelling at each other, that's going to be horrible for the locker room and all that. You know what? It's two alpha dogs. Two alpha dogs going at one another isn't a problem. But an alpha dog kind of getting on a guy who's just happy to be there or isn't expected to be a superstar, that's when it could get a little bit ugly. Guys could turtle up a little bit. Hey, I'm always going to defer to you on everything. And I don't think you can have that on this team.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No, I don't think you want that at all. Can I get a quick Robin in San Francisco on Warrior defense? Give me Robin. We're tight on time here, but we got Robin sneaking in here before the buzzer. Robin, what do you got for us on Warriors defense?
Okay, JD, can you hear me? Because I'm in the car, and I just don't want the reception. Can you hear me all right?
Hi, Robin. Yes, I can hear you great.
Okay, so here's what I think. The last caller, I kind of agree and disagree. Listen, Curry is never going to be a lockdown defense, okay, a player. So he's a defense. So there's no defense there for him either. So you picture this. D-Lo, and who else out there? Colley Stein, and who else you got? Name the five. You got D-Lo, you got Curry. You've got
Draymond and Colley Stein, and you're going to have to start either McKinney, Burks, or Robinson the third. One of those three is going to have to start, at least initially.
Now picture that defensive lineup. You're dead right there. That's all I got to say, you guys.
There you go. Thank you very much.
There's some potential for disaster defensively.
You got one guy who's a superior defender, and you got some other guys who are chasers.
And you've got Colley Stein, who you think should be a good defender, and really isn't.
Robin is saying for the Warriors to win, they're going to have to outscore teams.
That's why you get D'Angelo Russell.
Maybe that's why Ron Adams didn't want to go for the full 82. It's like, there is nothing I could do to make this better.
I'm going to focus on player development. Let's get some Pascals and some Pools and some Smiley Geeches ready for that championship
Smiley
run in 2020-2021.
I'm getting a Smiley Geech jersey. That's what I'm getting. Sean, you asked Sean Hyken from Bleacher Report, name your top four in the West. Give me your top four. Or did you say top four overall or top four in the West?
It's top four in the West.
Give me your top four in the West.
I'm going to go Clippers, Utah.
I'm tracking with you right now.
And then the Lakers.
Interesting. I can't wait for your fourth one.
Portland.
Wow. Really?
Continuity. And I think Denver's probably fifth.
I've got Denver in my top four, and I've got Houston in my top four. I've got the Clippers in my top four.
I think Houston, the Warriors, and the Spurs are 6, 7, 8. And then I actually think there's going to be a break still. Like, it won't be as great as last year in terms of, what was it, 9 games between 8th and 9th?
It was pretty nasty.
But I think it's those 8, and then I think you're going to have the Sacramentos and the Pelicans and the Dallases are all going to be in the 30s somewhere,
really?
But not touching the playoffs.
They're going to be disappointed 90 miles from here if they don't get, because they had 39 last year.
Yeah. I don't know whose spot they can take, though, unless they think they're taking the Warriors spot.
Clippers, Utah, Houston, Denver are my top four in the West.
Okay.
Because I don't know what they add. I know I get LeBron and I get Anthony Davis, but I can't tell you. Oh, wow. We're down to 30 seconds
in
the show.
Rick Tittle.
Rick Tittle's on the way.
Coming up next.
Yeah, we were just getting into some good NBA. Well, maybe Rick will get some Hall of Fame stuff.
Yeah.
All righty. Good job, JD. See you on Monday.
Hey, we'll see you Monday, pal.
I'll see you at 9:55 a.m.
55?
We're on at 10.
58.
There you had a boy. That's my guy. For John Dickinson, I'm Jim Cosimore. We got Rick Tittle and company coming straight ahead right here on The Place to Be. 95.7 Log Aim.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.